begin the work session on LD 1545, Act to Make Technical Changes to Marines Marine Resources Laws and Elder Enforcement Mechanism. Representative Chapman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, we have 21 sections, the 20 that are written here, plus the one that was mentioned beyond, and I'm thinking that we had expressed various concerns or modifications or things to deal with some of those sections, and I'm wondering if it might be best if we try to quickly identify which sections are what we feel pretty good about and which sections we might not feel quite so good about, and try to isolate our conversation that way.
Section 1. Representative Chapman.
Well, I, for one moment.
Senator Johnson had a...
Thank you. I'm just a little bit of a concern about, without reopening to have any public input, changing the gear type. Because I know, there are some leases on Damariscotta River, for instance, and people have, their own wharfs and piers and other activities, and I know that concerns about what the noise levels are going to be, depending on what methods and gear are being utilized, things like that, that if there were expectations set based on what a person was initially planning to do for gear, and someone's okay with that, if that gets changed without another opportunity for comment, that concerns me. Do you have any suggestions to why, what makes it so important that you be able to have that requested and authorized by the department without a public comment?
Well, the reason that we are raising this with you, Deirdre Gilbert, Department of Marine Resources, is that the existing law allows leaseholders to request additions or deletions for species on their lease type, excuse me, on their lease. And I think when that was granted, my sense is that there was some kind of understanding potentially that if they're changing the species, it's probably going to necessitate a change in gear. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to allow a change in species and not allow at least minor and potentially less intrusive forms of gear to be used concurrent with that change. It's not really useful to us to be able to change species if we can't change gear. And so we wanted to be clear that is what we would need to do to be able to change species. We've had requests to change species. I've talked with the hearings officer. The ones that we have pending are typically in order to go from something like, in one case, it's actually something on the surface that would go to just being on the bottom, and so presumably would be less of an impact. But we're unclear, I guess, whether or not we could actually make that change under the existing law, and so we wanted to kind of get some clarity around that at the advice of the AG's office that we can make gear modifications concurrent with the species as long as they are consistent with the findings made under the original lease. So that's why we're bringing it forward. I would say we're trying to strike a balance, obviously, in the process that is available to leaseholders as well as to the public, and trying to kind of use some common sense as to where would things likely be problematic and not allow those kinds of things, and allow things that we, in our research and estimation, do not seem to create problems for people.
I guess I'd be interested in, I hear what you're saying, and I think that as long as it's less intrusive, that's not an issue, but if it's going to be more so, I think it should require public comment. I don't know quite how to finagle that in terms of language, but that's my inclination on that.
Representative Chapman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some serious problems with Section 1, 2, and 4, and I, and the difficulty that I have is that the aquaculturists and the riparian owners in my district are, let me say, not don't uniformly have faith in the department for the decision making that, that they're granted, and to increase their ability to make further decisions without public input goes counter to the very significant pressures that I experience in my district. And so I think this has to be considered more fully than we're likely to want to do this afternoon.
Let's scratch that section.
Could I just comment? I mean, my reading of this is, as long as it's consistent with the findings made under subsection 7A, and 7A would be the public hearing process that was carried out. So it seems to me that if, as you said, if it's more obtrusive or creates more problems that weren't discussed in the original lease process, then you wouldn't be able to do this. You would have to all go through another hearing process. So if they were going from the bottom, which would have been to a surface lease, then that would obviously cause, that wouldn't have not have been covered in the original hearing process. And so you,
right, just the movement from the bottom to the top, just to be clear. I mean, our decision criteria are around things like ingress and egress and, you know, commercial fishing, like the interactions. So if moving something from the bottom to the top were likely to cause problems with respect to any of those things, then that would be not consistent with the findings.
Representative?
Thank you, Representative Kamiga. So I think we might be restricting the DMR a little bit much here. So if someone gets a license for oysters, and then they come back later and they want to add mussels to that, are you saying that they're going to have to go back through the process because there's different gear involved there? Sorry.
Representative Chapman?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And the reason is that the gear type affects those other riparian concerns. And it's, at the present time, what I'm saying is that the leeway that's presently there is a matter of current concern. And to increase the leeway is simply going to exacerbate the situation that we have at the moment, I believe.
Senator Johnson?
For me, it's whether the change in gear is changing the impact for the riparian owner. If it affects, you know, travel around the leased area, if it affects the noise and sediment because they're doing suction pumping, for harvest and aid the harvest off the bottom instead of floating it. I mean, there are various ways they can impact the landowners with what they're changing. That it's not, for me, it's not because they're changing the species. It's a matter of whether they are changing the practice in such a way that it imposes different conditions on the adjacent landowners or the habitat.
Representative Devin.
Thank you, Representative Kamiga. Well, Ms. Gilbert, didn't you just say if there's a fundamental change to the lease site that's going to impact the lease site, then that's not covered under the initial granting of the lease, correct?
Maybe I'm
a bit confused. So what Senator Johnson just described, there could be, by changing gears, changing species, you could affect the impacts of the culturing that are occurring on that lease site. I guess my point is that you can change a lot of species. You can go different species and change your gear and not really have an impact. For
agreed.
Right, and so what I'm concerned is that this committee is asking that the DMR, every time there's a slight change to the lease site, to have that lease, that the owner of the lease site, to go back through a process, which is going to be very onerous for the leaseholder and also very onerous for the DMR. If there are going to be impacts to the environment, if there are going to be significant impacts to the environment or significant impacts not only to the riparian owners but to all stakeholders, then yes, you probably do need some sort of a review. And I would say that the DMR is equipped to make a decision whether that review needs to be made or not. I don't think we need to mandate that the DMR have a, you know, go through a major process every time somewhat there's a relatively minor change to a lease site.
I would agree. Is that Senator Johnson?
And I would argue that what you're suggesting is not what I was trying to get at. I was not trying to suggest that a gear change is the problem. I was trying to suggest that if the impact of that gear change is, you know, obtrusive, then there should be a hearing on it. And I don't know how we get to how that is an expectation of the agency to determine in this process. And I guess perhaps it would be helpful if we were to take a look at the language that is referenced regarding that process. But I just want to be sure that we're establishing that expectation for the department. If they're making that change, it's not just a matter of whether it's going to stay within that space, but you know, whether it's going to create problems for other stakeholders.
Representative Chapman, then Representative Perry.
Is Section 1 for all kinds of leases? Or because Section 2 is just for the limited purpose lease, which have to be renewed annually. And Section 1, it doesn't say what type of lease you're discussing. So is this for all types of leases, including the LCA?
6072 are the standard leases, which are the leases that we have are standard, which are 10 years, experimental, which are 3 years, and LPAs, which are one-year licenses.
So Section 1 only refers to the 10-year lease?
Correct.
And so, in essence, during that 10-year period of time, the leaseholder wants to do something different than what they said they were going to do when they got the lease in the first place. And the question is, how much discretion does the department have to allow them to do that versus at what point do they have to actually collect some additional public input? That, to me, seems to be the question. Is that your understanding?
Yes. I mean, that is the question that I understand the committee to be grappling with.
Representative Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had a lot of personal dealings with DMR for about 20 years. I don't think that they're going to make decisions that damage the areas. I don't think the scientists there are going to allow something that shouldn't be there to be there. I think that we need to entrust them on some of this stuff, that their scientists are going to be looking at all these things. And I don't think it's us as to supervise the whole thing, but not to micromanage what they're going to be doing.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Representative Kamiga. I think that I found the answer. The reference 7A in 6072, which surprisingly, when I opened the book and there it was, actually references a number of things. Lease will not unreasonably interfere with the ingress and egress of riparian owners. Will not unreasonably interfere with navigation, will not unreasonably interfere with fishing or other uses of the area. That paragraph goes on. Lease will not unreasonably interfere with significant wildlife habitat and marine habitat. And that goes on to discuss flora and fauna. One of the things here references the lease does not unreasonably interfere with the public use or enjoyment within 1,000 feet of a beach, park, or docking facility owned by the federal government, the state government, or a municipal government agency, or certain conserved lands. You know, is there any way in this process that that, you know, would be interpreted the same concerns regarding adjacent landowners rather than just governmental entities and conservation areas? Because if that would be something I would expect to hear concerns about from a hearing process, and if there were those concerns raised at a hearing, would that be applied to your judgment on this change request?
Again, if I understand your question, I think it would be relative to A, which is the ingress and egress of the riparian owners. So anybody who's accessing their property via the water, if that were impacted at all by this lease, then that would be raised.
That would be one, but I would be concerned if, because of the change of gear, that the water off their, in their, you know, property is all going to be silted up on a regular basis from, you know, suction equipment harvesting or something like that. And I just, if that's the sort of thing that you would, I like what I see here in terms of many different types of impacts that would necessarily be part of your consideration, and I think that's appropriate and that's covered. If, as long as you would tell me that you would also take into consideration the testimony that people have presented about their various concerns in the first place, that would be altered because of what the nature of the request for change is, that you would take that into consideration.
We would certainly take into consideration all the findings from the hearing as they apply to these criteria. I don't know if you're suggesting potentially that a riparian owner might raise a concern not relative to these criteria. Like, that would be problematic. But if it's relative to any of these criteria, they would certainly be taken into account. That's as much as we can do, right? We can't consider things that aren't part of the decision criteria.
Representative Chapman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The problem I have is there's nothing in this suggested technical change that will even inform the riparian owners that a change is being considered. So the riparian owners have no input whatsoever into the changes that we're authorizing the department to make. And I think that's a serious problem.
I don't see how it's a serious problem, though, because it's, if the changes are not... The changes have to be consistent. While there are changes, they have to be consistent with the original lease. If they're not, I mean, if they're significant changes and they have an impact, then they can't be approved under this. I mean, if it's something that's going to be to change the impact of the riparian owners, and granted, that's in the judgment of the department, but. I mean, somebody's got to make that judgment. Representative Chapman.
Let's have the judgment made by the parties involved. Let the riparian owners judge for themselves whether the impact is of a concern so they can communicate that concern to the department. The riparian owners don't even know that the change is taking place, and by the definition, it cannot have been involved in the original hearing, because if it were in the original hearing, then it's not a year change It would not be a change if it were in the original hearing. So we're authorizing the department to make a change on the department's assessment of the situation without the riparian owner's assessment of the situation being involved or have the ability to be involved. That's the problem. And since we're dealing with a situation in which riparian owners right now have very little faith in the department's ability to make reasonable decisions, for a variety of, even on procedural matters, we have a problem of granting the department unilateral decision-making on something that may affect the riparian owners without the riparian owners even being notified. I can't go along with it.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion for a change, or do we want to just move on and...
Well, I think that if the department can offer a suggestion for how the riparian owners could be involved with the change-making process that they have in mind that they're bringing to us, I'd entertain that, certainly.
Okay. Well, let's think about that and move on to section – that is section 1 and 2 are both very similar. Okay, let's, can we come back to that? And what's section 3 is the scallop spat, which I know Representative Devin had looked into this and suggests 25 millimeters as a more reasonable number. But there's somebody, at least one person, who's got scallops who are. What if we gave, also added a line that said, or by the commissioner may issue special permits to sell larger scallops? Representative Devin?
Thank you very much, Representative Camiga. The only reason I want to – this is not one person that is trying to work outside the law. This is one person that is potentially starting a small industry for us. He needs to be recognized for that. You agree? That, I mean, this guy, Mr. Brewer, has been trying to do something for quite some time. It looks as though he's having a little bit of success. Other people are going to look to him. He needs to be rewarded. And I don't know how you word it, but, you know, after he gets rid of his seed, there won't be any more of that size, and people will be selling it within a year, and 25 millimeters is going to be plenty large.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you. I'm sorry. My comments aren't relevant to that, but I just want to pass along a few of my thoughts before I have to run out. By section, section 10 is where we are repealing the use of a check requirement, and my suggestion is the new language, similar to what we used regarding lobster landings, should be substituted check and or receipt identifying the seller, buyer, and other information is required by department rule or something of that nature. Also, section, is it actually 21 now, or is it, I didn't catch whether that's the right numbering still. The last section was removing the language prohibiting Elver dealers from purchasing Elvers with a non-negotiable check. My suggestion is, if checks are an option, why would we not preclude their using non-negotiable ones? I would think we might want to still have some value to keep that in there.
I'm not well-versed in other sections of the law necessarily, but I would expect that there is a section of Maine law that says it's illegal to pass a bad check. And so
it's duplicate, you see. All right, so scratch it for that reason rather than because of the other.
Sure.
All right, I'm comfortable with that. And then you've mentioned suspending our license to lottery.
Yes.
Addition. Thank you.
So, language tool, I mean, if we change the scallop thing to 25 millimeters and some kind of a special permit to allow someone.
One thought that I had, I don't know how quickly Mr. Brewer can or intends to sell that seed that he currently has on hand, but I mean, it could be. The limit could be 40 millimeters to a certain point in time and then become 25 at a future date, and that would maybe be a little bit cleaner than us trying to issue permits.
Doug?
Thank you very much, Representative Camiga. I think that what Ms. Gilbert is offering is a good idea, and we should give them 2 years.
So is that all right with everybody? I guess he had nods. Section 4. Section 4.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a problem with Section 4. It relates to special licenses, and it just wants to extend teachers to higher education institutions. We've had a problem with special licenses, and I've been trying to talk with people about what changes to make more generally to control the problems, the problematic outfall from some of the special license rules that are in place. And so in light of that, the main question I have here is how Section 4 relates to the special licenses in general. This is Section 4 is trying to exempt could you explain the relationship between
sure.
this and the special license?
So the process for issuing a special license is that the applicant applies to the department and basically gives us the information on what it is, the activity that they want to undertake, and what laws or regulations they needed to be exempted from in order to do that. Once we have that information, in most cases, we present that proposal to the DMR Advisory Council for their approval, and there is a list of individuals who are not required to get DMR Advisory Council approval, and that includes basically someone from the department, a person who operates an aquarium, a person who operates a festival, a person who undertakes a public service activity, a municipality that operates a hydraulic or mechanical softshell clam dredge, a teacher who is providing a primary or secondary school program, and that's the section that we are seeking to amend to include college professors. And that was really just simply based on recent experience where we had, for example, most recently a professor from Colby who needed to collect 500 Littorina littorea periwinkles for a class project, and therefore spent the afternoon sitting in our DMR Advisory Council room to present her research to them, and it seemed potentially like not something that they felt strongly about needing to review if it's for an educational purpose. So it was an attempt to add college-level instructors to the list that we have.
Representative Chapman. Right, and the problem that we've had is where the story just described would seem fine, but a related story would be a research scientist who then uses the special license to on the part of perhaps a graduate student or postgraduate student who enters into pre-commercial or commercial work under that license. That's the problem we've had. So it's unlikely that a school teacher of an elementary school or high school would be entering into commercial activity under the special license. But since we've had that problem at the college level, I just wanted to raise that as an issue.
Representative Devin?
Thank you very much, Representative Kamiga. Representative Kamiga, these special licenses don't enable people to conduct commercial business. These are special licenses for professors and their students to it's either for educational purposes or research purposes. If these individuals are using these special licenses for commercial purposes, they are not within the law. So we're kind of creating a problem that doesn't exist. We use these licenses all the time at the Darwin Center. I collect specimens and ship them to Orono on a regular basis. Now, if I went out and collected 500 periwinkles and then went down to a dealer and sold them for $1 a pound, I would be, you know, I'd be abusing the DMC, the Darling Marine Center's license.
I just want to be clear. The special licenses are actually for research, aquaculture, and education. The reason aquaculture is there is that this is actually what was used for aquaculture prior to the creation of the lease process. The only prohibition on selling something is on marine organisms that are less than the minimum size established by statute. So there is no inherent prohibition on using special licenses for commercial activity. We have allowed them for commercial research, and I mean the vast majority of them are not for that purpose, but as you are aware, we discussed the sea cucumber hand harvesting fishery as a mechanism, like special licenses being a mechanism that we could use to determine the viability of that particular harvest methodology.
So there's no conditions on the special license?
There are conditions on the special license that we impose if somebody needs an exemption from a law or regulation that they would otherwise be in violation of. So you can't you can't sell something without a commercial license. So if you didn't possess that commercial license, the special license would have to exempt you from that if you were going to sell that organism. That is not, you know, the majority of instances are not to be able to sell something without a commercial license.
Okay. Representative Devin? Representative Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could that really be abused? I mean, for the special license, you don't need a commercial license, so Joe Smith could come to the department and say, we're going to do this research on lobsters and land thousands of pounds under this special license and go sell them, and they're doing their little research, and, I mean, this...
It couldn't be abused because we would have to exempt them from having to have a commercial lobster license,
which we wouldn't.
Right.
But once they got the special license, then they could turn around and use commercial use of that special license because you've exempted them from having a special license.
But
if they're allowed to sell.
The special license isn't a blanket authority to sell something. The special license exempts you from a law or regulation, and that's all it does. So in order for somebody to be able to sell lobsters who didn't have a commercial lobster license, we would have to say within the special license, this person is exempted from 6421,
right,
which we would not do. I mean, that is, we have never done that. But I just wanted to be clear that there's nothing about the special license that inherently says somebody can't use it for a commercial purpose if they have the appropriate license.
That's almost more confusing than...
It allows commercially oriented research.
Representative Chapman?
I think we've heard enough to understand that special licenses need considerable further review. I've been working on this for some time, and I expect to try to bring parties together and figure out what we can do to solve some of the problems with them. My suggestion for what's before us now is if the exception here in Section 4 to add the post-secondary school is for educational purposes only, then I have no problem with it. And we can deal with this commercial problem that is a current problem, is a significant problem today in my district, caused by this very problem. That's why I'm adamant to solve it. I don't mean to trip up this technical bill on the larger question of the misuse of special licenses, but I think that's something we have to get a handle on separately, and I'll work to do that.
Okay, so are you suggesting a change to this?
Yes, I'm suggesting that this be clear that it's for an educational purpose only, that this post-secondary school program could do this.
Can I ask a clarification, please?
So it should read secondary or post-secondary educational school program? Or education? Well, what about research, though?
I had school program for educational purposes only. But I also had a clarifying question. You want that to only apply to post-secondary, or do you want, like, you know, second graders to not be able to set up a business, you know, plan to do some aquaculture? I mean, just wanting to make sure that it's only to post-secondary.
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
I mean, I think it should apply to all. Representative Chapman?
Yeah, this is in the section we're looking to say that council approval is not required. And so... if somebody's going to do something commercial, I think they need the council approval. That's simple. So I think that if you're doing all this exemption to the council approval, I think we can only go as far as for educational purposes. If somebody wants to do something more involved than that, I think they need the council approval.
Well, what about research, though? That would probably be the primary, you know, the primary... For post-secondary use would probably more be research and not
Well, the research question, how much of a burden is it for a researcher to get the council approval? What we heard was that apparently we just heard a story that a researcher had to spend all afternoon in front of a council in order to get approval for it, but it wasn't clear to me whether that was because he was involved in commercial work or just needed to do the research work.
Research.
It was just research work?
Do you want to delineate between research that is intended for commercial purposes?
Well, this is where the line gets blurry. So we're going to have to revisit the issue for special licenses in the future. If we're trying to make it easier for educators, I think we should limit it to education at the present time.
Representative Dickerson?
Thank you. Well, I was just going to suggest that we simply add a sentence at the end of Section F that said for educational research purposes only, or so that it's clear that it's educational research, not commercial research, and then that covers both departments, and if we want to revisit it later, then we can do that. I think that has to go to the clerk. Yeah. Does that make sense to anybody, or have I ruffled some feathers there?
Representative Devin, do you have, does that seem reasonable? Okay. All right. I think we're good there.
So I'm sorry, I just want to make sure. So it's for educational research purposes only or for educational purposes only? The former?
Yeah.
Educational purposes?
Okay.
Thank you.
Section 5, allowing the aquaculture to receive other funds. Everybody okay with that? Section 6, Atlantic salmon, that seems pretty straightforward. Section 7, removing the sunset. Representative Weaver.
Mr. Gill, the statement here about lobster tail process under this subsection may not be offered for sale within the state in a wholesale or retail trade. It says, what lobster are they talking about? I was in Section 6 and couldn't see what that was.
So that is meant to say that oversized lobster tails that would not be legal in the state of Maine cannot be sold in the state.
But now we can sell lobster tails now in Maine, can't we?
We can sell tails.
Regular. Okay, yeah. Thank you. That's what I thought it was. Okay, thank you. I'm good. Oh, no, I don't.
All right, so Section 7, I guess we're okay with. Section 8. Do we want to spend another half an hour talking about overs? Section 9 is hoop nets. I think that is probably going to be important. When we, with Atlantic States, is that we do that and protect, at least, in fact, there may be a suggestion that we prohibit all eel harvest other than elvers if we want to keep our elver fishery. So. And then the section on being a lookout for illegal harvesting. Everybody okay with that? The bulk pile section. I thought we already enacted that, but
it was part of the previous technical changes, but it was not the one of the limited number of things that we advanced in the last bill.
Section 12, municipal shellfish. Section 13 and 14 are both on personal use. Section 15 is really technical.
Did you take all those points?
I did. They're all good. Section 16, that's the one that the issue was raised, is how does someone who legally buys more than 50 worms from a harvester, you know, somebody who's taken a charter boat captain, who's taken a fairly large number of people out fishing, might buy a couple hundred. I don't know if the lieutenant wants to
He's actually a major, I was informed. Major, and I didn't unintentionally.
I thought he was a major.
Demoted him.
I was going to ask the major to come up, and then you demoted him.
I would be happy to have Alan address that. I the one thing I was going to say is I know in other areas we do, I think within salmon, for example, we have provisions on unless you have a receipt. Is there anything?
Well, the receipt, of course, is a practical thing. I mean, if we would look along with possibly using a receipt, it's kind of a practical thing. We have to look at the situation. And if it's a charter boat captain, and we know the officer knows it's a charter boat captain, and he has to buy more than 50, be in possession of more than 50 worms to do his business, to go fishing, then, you know, it's not going to be a problem. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I mean, the question was raised to me by another representative who has somebody in his district who's a worm dealer, mm-hmm. who oftentimes sells more than 50 worms to someone. Mm-hmm. So he just wants to make sure his customers aren't going to be written up.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Deirdre, but this is primarily geared towards harvesting.
Correct.
So.
To prevent the taking of.
Right.
Okay. So if they were in a situation where they could not have harvested them,
right.
then they wouldn't be right.
I keep going back to like the common sense approach to the situation.
Everybody else okay with that? Thank you very much, Major. Section 17. A tow of shrimp is actually a lot.
My family, the way we like shrimp, so that's just about right.
Yeah. Section 18, that makes perfect sense, I think. And Section 19 with a permanent facility, that's something I've heard other dealers complain about, is that the fly-by-night operation. And then Section 20 is the check section. We skipped that because there's no language there, yeah. So Section 10 and Section 20 are both dealing with the use of checks to pay for elders, and so Section 21. But Senator Johnson pointed out that we had language in the landings bill that said check or
written receipt.
And department want us to put that language in there?
That would be helpful to have some. It certainly serves the purpose of having a record of the transaction. I think with the swipe card system that we'll be implementing, potentially that will be less of a concern next year, hopefully, but it can't hurt to have a written document as well.
So would it make sense to have written or electronic documentation? I mean, we don't want to make people, if they're doing the swipe card thing, they probably don't need to have something paper as a practical, you know, if it's electronically reported. Does the committee care? I'm not seeing a whole lot of concern on faces here. Senator Johnson?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we want to create something that would be an obstacle to your implementation of the swipe card system that, I mean, obviously fulfills the same function. I'm not sure the best language to do that, but I would suggest that some reference to a receipt in written or electronic form that provides the information required by department rule, you know, and let that be worked out.
And then the last section is not there yet, and that's suspending the over-licensed lottery until...
In the time that I'm thinking about it, I was thinking about potentially if a lottery is to be held, we could have it open between potentially say February 15th and March 15th. So have it be open for applications for a month and then do the drawing and notify people essentially a week before the season. It didn't seem to be too problematic this year. It's a matter of obtaining a dip net, so it's not really like someone needs a lot of advance notice.
Representative?
Thank you very much, Representative Kamiga. If we're going to be discussing a lottery, I would like to put in an amendment that there would be no fee for the Elver Lottery for the next 5 years. We'll sunset it then. The department just made $125,000. That's more than enough money to cover the cost of running a lottery for 5 years. Thank you.
I wouldn't support it. I mean, maybe it doesn't need to be $25, but I think there needs to be a fee.
It is $25. I just wanted to make sure it was clear that that money goes into the Elver Management Fund. It's not just limited to running the lottery. This year it provided, I think it was $60,000 for enforcement of the fishery. I think with the swipe card system, we are going to need money both to enforce and administer this fishery broadly. I understand your point. I would say that my knowledge of the people who applied to the lottery, the ones that actually won, when we talked with them, they weren't people without work. In many cases, they were people who, one case it was a doctor, in one case it was an IT person, in one case it was somebody with a lobster license. They're not people who are relying on this as though I am unemployed and this is my opportunity. It's somebody typically who wants to do this because of the opportunity involved in this fishery. We'd be very concerned about entirely eliminating that source of funding for the fishery.
Representative Devin?
Thank you very much, Representative Kamiga. 2 points. First of all, those people are, like it or not, they're applying for a job. You apply to state for any other job, you don't have to submit a fee with your application, number one. Number two, the vast majority of those people are not benefiting from those funds that are being used for the Elver fishery. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's unfair to those people. And it's a very large amount of money.
So Representative Devin made a motion to amend the bill with a no fee for the lottery. Anybody seconding? Representative Dickerson, please.
Thank you. I just want to say that I understand that the department needs this money, and we need to do all the things we need to do with the money. So we're in a really awkward position right here. However, the problem is that it's kind of an unfair way to come up with the money to administrate the program. I guess I'm having a hard time understanding how we have such a limited number of licenses, and perhaps you could clarify this for us, but how can we have such a limited number of licenses available for people? And so many people can apply for those licenses. I mean, I guess you could say, well, it's a risk you're taking, you know, and, you know, buyer beware. I mean, maybe that's one way of looking at it. But by the same token, I have very mixed feelings about that because it seems to me that this is a resource that is more broadly spread out. And if we're asking people who are, I have feelings both sides of the fence. Obviously, if people are applying for one of these licenses, they're taking a $25 risk. I mean, people go down to the corner store every day and they spend their money on Powerball and all kinds of things. And they may end up with a license that gets them the ability to go out and fish for a resource that nets the amount of $2,000 a pound. But is that really the way that we want to run our department? I kind of feel like it's not exactly, it doesn't quite pass the straight-faced test in some ways, shape, fashion, and form for me. And I guess maybe even though the hour is late and we're all growing a bit brain dead, I felt that I needed to support my colleague on the other end of the horseshoe there because I do share some of the same concerns that he has. Thank you.
Representative Weaver?
Ms. Gilbert, did you have any complaints about the $25?
No.
Let me, and also, one of our biggest problems in the Elbert fishery is enforcement.
Correct.
So it only seems natural. I mean, $60,000 should go is no problem. I mean, it may be a problem, but it's not. That's where the money should go to help these folks out there that are out in the woods chasing these folks at night and the things they have to do. So I see no problem with the $25.
Representative Saxton?
I have heard some complaints about it, but just to kind of move on from this, I think there needs to be something charged. If we don't want to do 25, then let's come up with a lower figure. But I think something does need to be charged. We do need to help with the enforcement side of things. So maybe it'll be $10, $15.
Well, Representative Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any problem with the $25. I think the lower you make it or you make it no fee, you're going to have you'll have the whole state applying. This is kind of cutting it down to people that are probably serious, and they're going to buy a lottery ticket, or it's three packs of cigarettes, I think that the 29 people are very happy that they spent $25 to get the license.
Representative Doak.
Yeah, I have no problem with $25. You have the law enforcement problem, you got the swipe card that you got to come up with, and that's going to be expensive. Yeah, I don't think $25 is asking too much. Thank you.
Why don't we, we have a motion a second to add to the add to the bill no fee. Why don't we vote on that and then we can move on to the whole bill. So all those in favor of the motion to put in a no fee lottery, over lottery for 5 years? One. All those opposed? Everybody else? All right. Representative Kruger?
I would like to move that we ought to pass on this with the amendment being the language that we have worked out this afternoon.
Second.